Ready?
1 second.
It's recording.
It's recording.
Good evening, everyone. This is Unforced Errors, two old guys talking about tennis. And I'm here with David Rudina, very good tennis player, podcast expert and studio entrepreneur, a man of many talents, very modest and not a lot to be modest about. And tonight, David, we're going to be talking about the greatest of all time, the GOAT. And the premise of this episode is, if I can explain, a comet hits the earth tomorrow and wipes out civilization.
Mm-hmm.
As we know, what's left of civilization. Some people might think there's not much left already.
Yes, definitely.
But after that, an alien comes down from a surviving planet and wants to know who was the greatest tennis player of all time. So all records, all matches have been frozen. They've got no chance to bump their way up the rankings after tonight.
Yes.
So who was the greatest of all time? David, what are your thoughts? You are that lone survivor talking to the alien who's coming down. You're the only link with the old civilization. What will you say to the alien?
Okay, first of all, that was probably one of the best intros for a show ever that I've ever heard. Not because of the compliments, but because of the originality. I'll send a couple of compliments back at you. Jim being one of the most original people I've ever met on planet Earth. And you probably have felt it by now after five or six episodes.
It's very kind.
So this is a great conversation because it gets everybody, anybody that loves tennis to talk about it because, I mean, who? From all these generations we've been having, when did tennis start? 1800s?
Well, there was a form of tennis around in Henry VIII's time, which is the... I'm going to get crucified for this. My history is terrible. The 16th century, real tennis, which still exists now, which involved balls and a net and a wall. So I think it's been around since about then.
Yeah, you know, I watched, and I think I sent you this video a long time ago.
You did,
the first video of tennis that was ever done was two barrels, one on each side with a rope between them. And there was lines, and all the rackets were wooden, and the only shot in tennis was a lob, and the crowd would sit on the floor around the court. I will never forget that video.
By the way, I must tell listeners tonight that we've been drinking whiskey and Coke. It's a very interesting bottle from David's wine cellar, whiskey cellar tonight.
It's something like that.
But read out the label because it's quite interesting, really.
It's good. One is Talisker Sky.
Mm-hmm. What's that word?
Condom.
Yes, that's the word
friends.
Which jumps out at me. Condom.
Dukle Sevjak Armagnac.
I presume that's a place in France.
It was given by a customer. Okay, so.
So, let's get that list out. Maybe it's not a bad way to decide. Surely we can cut this episode short.
Yes, just by saying the slams.
Who's won the most Grand Slams? Surely that is the key to who is the greatest of all time.
One
but
of course,
it's not as simple as that, is it?
No.
But if we were to use that criteria, well, it would be Roger Federer in the men's. It's also the women's. We'll come back to that later.
Yeah,
because,
women's
of course,
and men.
Roger Federer, 20. Rafa Nadal, 19. Mm. Novak Djokovic, creeping up on them, 16. Pete Sampras, 14. Bjorn Borg, 11.
Mm-hmm.
So surely, well, we must say to the alien, these are the top five best ones, quite simple. But is it as simple as that? Can you just measure the greatest of all time just on how many Grand Slams they've won? What do you think, David?
Definitely not. Grand Slams are very important. Number of weeks or days or months or years as number one.
Number one, okay.
That can count as well. Because it's difficult to stay at the top. You got to keep winning. You got to keep defending those points to stay up there.
You trust the rankings enough that the number one
not
is...
Not at 100%, but I know you're going to have something to say about that. And then third...
You bet.
Yes, I knew it.
Try and shut me up on that.
Then the third, it's rivalries, isn't it? Who has the records
head
over each
head.
Other? Head to head.
Yeah.
Because... It's tough to say this. Imagine somebody won more Grand Slams than everybody else but then somebody beat him every single time they played.
Yeah.
Is it the guy that won all the slams, or is it the guy that beat the guy that won all the slams?
Well, yeah, you could say Federer was world number one for a few years before Nadal came to prominence, but he was beating Roddick, Hewitt, who kind of didn't do great things anyway. So you could say there was a kind of vacuum which he filled.
Yes, he did.
So it's hard to argue. You can only be the best in your era. You can't blame someone for being world number one for 5 years and say, well, there was no one to take you on.
You can't. I agree.
I'll throw a question back at you because I think that's really interesting about you measure greatness not just on Grand Slams, but how many weeks world number one. Would you rather have a superior record to your big rival in terms of you were number one for more weeks, more years, but they won one more Grand Slam than you?
Definitely not.
No.
That's why the slams are more important, isn't it?
I think the number of Grand Slams won is a very good indicator of who the greatest of all time is. What's interesting in kind of separating them out, so-and-so is the greatest, but who's the greatest of Lendl, Connors, Agassi, who all won 8 Grand Slams, Becker too?
Well done,
how do you separate those out? And things like who was number one for longer, who had the greatest gap between winning Grand Slams, the longevity of their career, who won Grand Slams on more surfaces. I mean, you could say with Nadal, amazing achievement, but a lot of his Grand Slams came on clay, 12.
They did.
He wasn't a one-trick pony. He's won the US Open.
Absolutely.
US Open 4 times, which people forget. Not consecutive, different
years. And he finally beat Federer at the Wimbledon.
Wimbledon, he's seen as a weak grass court player. He's won it twice.
He did.
And he was a runner-up 3 times, I think.
Yes.
And he's coming back after a miserable run at Wimbledon.
Yeah.
He's had a good showing the last 2 times out he's played. So I think that's a really important thing to consider when you're considering the greatest of all time.
Yes, you're bringing so many good points. And then I will say that it's even more important as well that I have better records against my rivals.
Yeah.
Because it feels wrong somehow. Imagine I'm the best player of all time, but then I have bad records against all my rivals.
So let's get specific on this point.
Yes.
Roger Federer, greatest of all time if you're looking at Grand Slams. But he's got a losing record against Djokovic and Nadal in head-to-heads.
He does.
I think if you look at both Grand Slams and also if you look at ATP tournaments, the whole tournaments.
Everything.
Too. So, yeah. It's a very tricky one, but I think if you break it down to the greatest of all time, it's very hard to say. I think if you break it down to surfaces, I would say clay. Well, the argument's
easy.
Over. I would think yes.
Easy.
Yeah. He's won 12. He's only been beaten twice. And beyond that, Bjorn Borg, 6-time winner. Never lost a French Open final.
Yeah.
He was beaten twice by the same bloke. So he's kind of probably next, I would imagine, from my knowledge of the
clay,
Open era.
There it is.
Gustavo Kuerten, too, great player. Lendl, then you're looking at Verlander. But I think Nadal, if you're looking at grass, I think you'd have to say Federer.
8.
With Sampras, a big argument. He's 7.
Yes, very close.
Didn't lose a final, whereas Federer's lost quite a few.
He did,
but maybe you could say Federer's been in more finals, so he's even greater.
Yes.
Again, Bjorn Borg, I'm going to mention him. 5 and consecutive too. Same as Federer. I think winning consecutively is a big thing too.
It is as well.
Yeah, staying on this argument, hard court, I think Federer's won the most hard court championships. And Djokovic could catch up on that.
Djokovic
has won 10,
will catch up.
10 hard court Grand Slam titles.
Yes.
So, it's a big thing. And another thing to consider with the greatest of all time is periods when a player dominated totally.
Mm.
You know, that year when Djokovic won the calendar Grand Slam.
Wow.
Let's throw in the name Rod Laver too. He won the calendar Grand Slam.
He did twice.
I think he won 11 Grand Slams. He's quite far down the list. It might even have been less than Borg. Let's have a look. He won 11. So he's in 6th equal place in the terms of the number of Grand Slams won. But twice he won a Grand Slam sweep in the same calendar year. That's got to bump him up. That can't mean that he's the 6th equal greatest player of all time.
Yes.
I'm itching to say who I think it's going to be. Can I reveal? Can I break my promise?
You're ready to do that. I mean, you know who you think is the best of all time?
Yeah.
I like that. Go for it. I'm ready.
If that alien crashes into Earth tomorrow, I would think, and I didn't think this a few years ago, although he was the leading Grand Slam winner a few years ago too, I think Roger Federer would have to be in terms of longevity, the way the slams are spread quite evenly across the slams, apart from the French Open.
Yeah.
He's only won once, but an underrated clay court player. I think Rafa Nadal is hard to argue against him second, and Novak Djokovic. Pete Sampras, the fourth most number of Grand Slams. I would bump up Rod Laver to number four in that list. Sorry, Pete, because I think he dominated. Unlike Pete Sampras, but like the top three I just mentioned, he won every Grand Slam.
Amazing.
Sampras never won the French.
No.
Didn't get as close as other players to reaching that Holy Grail. So I would say the top four would be the current big three and Rod Laver. And before the professional era, I don't know enough to say, but I would mention a player called Don Budge, who won 10 Grand Slams. But David, your thoughts? I've shot my bolt. I've given my opinions here.
Yeah, look, I like your picks. I think, of course, we're a little bit early. We're going to have another podcast about the GOAT in maybe 5-6 years' time.
Yeah.
When all this big three leave the tennis world. It's amazing how you have, and most people will put the top best players of all time from the same era.
We're biased, aren't we? Partly because we're living through this era.
But not only. They broke all the records.
Yeah.
So not only were biased, agreed, but they broke the
records.
We've
got the stats, haven't we?
We got the stats. So, and then there's also this question about how can we compare players from different eras that never played each other.
But we can compare the top three because they played in the same era as each other, and no one could say it was easy.
So it's definitely difficult to have an answer to the best of all time. I like your pick for Federer because he deserves it. He's like a true talent of tennis. He's a magician. And not only he's won more Grand Slam to date, he has more number of days as number one. But he also keeps competing at 38 and unheard of
yeah.
in tennis. In this era specifically, because this era is so tough compared to the eras in the past. We had players playing until their 40s and above that, wasn't it, back in the day? There's
yes.
some players that did it and
yeah.
were winning Grand Slams. But the competition was not as hardcore as it is these
yeah.
days.
Ken Rosewall played until late 30s, early 40s.
Yes.
Jimmy Connors.
Yes, there you go.
Course, yeah.
And even though Federer lost that final, that last final versus Djokovic at Wimbledon, I mean, just the match
what
he
a final.
Played, it was insane. How does he do that at 38? So I definitely put Federer as the best player of all time. Maybe a global way of looking at it in terms of men. But then if I was in Federer's shoes and I had all the Grand Slams, even if Nadal and Djokovic don't pass him in slams anymore or in weeks, he has lost more times against those two.
This is the big, yeah.
And I would leave my career thinking to myself.
It's the elephant in the room.
It is. It's like, okay, so I won all the slams. I have all the records, let's
yeah.
say, but I lost more times. I would leave my career feeling.
Can I just say,
yeah,
the head-to-head, and this isn't my argument, it's a lot of cleverer people than I have argued this, Federer fans, that his head-to-head is poor against Nadal because Federer, on his arguably his weakest service, clay,
yeah.
has still reached the final rounds where he comes up against Nadal, the Minotaur of clay.
Yes.
So he loses to him. Federer's best surface, arguably grass.
Yes.
Nadal, yes, there were 3 years where Nadal was there challenging
the
Federer, but often Nadal hasn't been there in the final round of grass.
Agreed.
So a lot of the head-to-head has been on Federer's,
on all the clay
Federer's least favourite battleground. That is kind of distorted.
Agreed. And how long is the clay court season compared to the grass?
Yes.
It's like
yeah.
one or two grass tournaments.
Exactly. So they're going to be playing each other more often, yeah. Federer hasn't got that excuse against Djokovic. I think they're better matched on all the surfaces
yes.
on paper.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot answer that. Yeah, Djokovic has got the upper hand.
Then there is
even on grass these days.
It is even on grass.
But it's close.
It's very close. Federer is like two down, two
it's
wins.
It's more of a rivalry, actually, than coming back
Federer.
Against Nadal.
Yeah, then even
it.
Though I'm a big fan of Federer, Nadal dethroned the king.
He did, yeah.
In a final of the Wimbledon, and Federer was never able to do it on clay. So, and who knows, Nadal might even pass him in slams. How many more Frenches does he have?
He definitely
and then at
could,
the end,
yeah.
Nadal will have.
Yeah.
Best record head-to-head. More Grand Slams.
I'm not a mystic, but I've always thought that Federer and Nadal will end their careers with the same number of Grand
Slams.
That
would be beautiful, no?
I've just got a feeling, though you would think if you're a betting man, you would think Nadal would overtake him and Djokovic would overtake both of them. But
yes.
I think Federer and Nadal might end up on 20 each.
21.
Yes, you'd
21.
Love that because that would mean one more for Federer.
One more Wimbledon at least.
Yes. About who's the greatest of all time.
We have,
but I
we
think
have Djok- to.
I think Djokovic will just fall short again. I think 20 each with Djokovic on 19.
19, I like that. And then what Federer is doing is unbelievable. 38 and he's fighting against these top players.
Yeah.
So is Nadal going to be able to do that? Is Djokovic going to be able to do
well,
that?
Well, while they have a chance of winning a Grand Slam, are they going to retire at all? And I just wonder if they'll just carry on till they're 40.
You see, that's the other part of the conversation that comes in, which is these three guys are making each other the best of all time.
Definitely. Whereas someone like Don Budge, he was the record holder then, I believe. And he knew he had to do 10 to become the record holder. So then he'd retire.
Yes.
But now, if Don Budge was born now, he'd maybe play until he won 20.
Another.
It would drive him on, but you can only be the best of your era. What can you do?
Exactly. So, which also makes us think about the past. Nowadays, everything is more advanced. The health system is better. The body, the human being is evolving and becoming stronger. And everything is so much more calculated. So it's very...
But it's hard not to believe that we've reached a peak. In 50 years' time, will we be talking about someone going for Grand Slam number 21 and his rivals have won 17 and 15 each?
Yeah.
I think...
It's a good question.
This is a golden time. This is like Halley's Comet passing through the Earth.
Unbelievable.
It's not going to happen regularly at
all. It's difficult to believe, isn't it?
Yeah.
Three players with this amount of Grand Slams, with the domination that they had in the last decade and a half.
Three men who are amazing. I say the word men for a reason. Could we insert a drum roll before this next section? Can you do that?
I can.
Let's have a break and let's have a drum roll. That was a good drum roll.
It was a great drum roll. So maybe the best of all time,
Phil Collins,
is not even a man. It might be a woman.
Who could you be thinking of?
I would say Serena probably is the best player of all time in tennis. The way that she has been dominating tennis, and she's older, excuse me the expression.
Yeah, she's
older now.
Same age
30,
as
38, 39, yes.
Yeah.
And she's still reaching
young.
Finals, and she's just not winning because of some mental block. Just pure talent. I don't know who in tennis has the same talent as Serena. You tell me, what do you think? Because when Serena wants it, and she's playing her maximum level, she is... a monster of tennis. When she's on fire, no woman in the world and many men cannot stop her.
Well, this is the amazing thing you can say about Serena Williams. Sometimes you look at her and go, that shot, she could actually play in the men's game and win. And
she could.
When she plays mixed doubles, yeah, sometimes she's taking on the man.
She is?
And kind of almost, yeah, rallying with them.
Yes.
Which is absolutely incredible. You couldn't say what further level could Federer, Djokovic and Nadal go to. She can go that extra level, can't she?
She can. Is this level of domination, is it just because there's never been any other player in her era, you know, to fight against her? Other than maybe Venus in her best, but even together,
yeah.
Serena has the record head to head.
They only fight her for a year or for a tournament.
Yes.
And then... they're injured or they lose interest.
They fall out.
Or
yeah.
With Clijsters.
Or Azarenka.
They have a child. A mother can't do that
yes,
as easily.
But it's not only the motherhood. I mean, there has been really great players out there that they just don't stay on top as Serena has for all these years. They go up and down, up and down.
They do. And Serena Williams has stayed on top, even though she plays very few run-of-the-mill ATP tournaments. She's a Grand Slam lady, really, isn't she? Other players have managed to have that kind of success, but just for a few months or a few tournaments, and then that's it. I'm trying to think to play devil's advocate of a female player who could rival Serena Williams, your choice.
Steffi Graf. Like, it had to be from another era.
Justin and then Nadal, she's an example of someone who briefly, on her day, she could rival Serena Williams, almost a bit like Robin Söderling on his day or Del Potro on his day, could beat the big three, but she couldn't beat her over a whole season or her Grand Slam record if you compared any 3 years of them at their best compared to Serena Williams, any 3 years of Serena's, even as Serena Williams at their worst over a three-year period, there'd be no argument.
If Serena hits those winners in the serves, Serena in the women's world compared to Federer in the men's world, who is best?
Who is best? Very good question. Well, I'm biased, as you know, so I would go for Roger Federer because he's had that sustained rivalry where sometimes his rivals seem to have been playing tennis on a different level to him. Federer's passed it. He's forgotten. Nadal and Djokovic have beaten him both 7 or 8 times in a row. And then whoosh, Federer will beat them at a Grand Slam tournament or again, the ATP Finals or a really big tournament and just take your breath away. He thought he was beaten. He's beaten his nemesis, who's beaten him 5 or 6 times in a row. So I would say a close run thing, but yeah, I think Federer has really had more demons to overcome in terms of rivals trying to pull him down from Everest or above him at Everest, kicking him when he's trying to overtake them.
Not only I agree with you, but I think you're not being biased there because I like your answer about Federer. And I think because of all the difficulties and the rivalries that he had, the sheer talent that he has, he could be considered the GOAT. So do you think that's it?
Well, I mean, exactly. I mean, with Federer, the other day I heard Brad Gilbert commenting on Federer's backhand. The weakest part of his game, very frustrating sometimes watching him dink that forehand in the net when Nadal's looped up a topspin to him.
Yes.
Brad Gilbert saying the other day, look at that. That's the most beautiful shot in the game. Federer's backhand, his weak shot, which he has worked very hard on. And, you know, for about 2 years ago, he was hitting it flat, beating Nadal, his big rival, with his weak shot, which Nadal plays to Federer.
That final at 2017 was insane. His backhand never been better than that day.
I would also say in the women's game, I would mention the name Monica Seles as someone who could have been the greatest of all time.
Yes.
A real shame.
Very good player.
A tragic story, very briefly, world number one, looking like she was going to clean up the game and become that multiple winner like Margaret Court, who we haven't mentioned, who's still got more, has she got more Grand Slams than Serena Williams or level?
She does.
But yes, Monica Seles, she was on course for the greatest of all time.
So, yeah, there's definitely lots of good names out there that deserve to be mentioned.
Yes. Martina Navratilova, we haven't mentioned her, have we? Chris Evert.
Steffi Graf. Some incredible players that really deserve to be called best of all time, almost. But
I think if that alien came down, just to conclude, the comet wipes out civilization, who was the greatest tennis player of all time? I would say, how about I arrange a match for you to watch with my magic kind of computer game where Roger Federer takes on Serena Williams.
Perfect.
And you can decide, alien, I'm going to leave it to you, who the greatest of all time is.
I like that.
And in the crowd, we'll be watching a lot of players who you could say were the greatest of all time too. Monica Seles.
That's a great celebration of
Navratilova, Nadal and Djokovic, who in three years' time, we might be laughing, we nominated Roger Federer, we might say, my God, we didn't realize these guys were going to win another 7 Grand Slams.
Djokovic is coming, man. It's crazy. But yes, for now, we can nominate Federer and Serena.
But let's not leave the final word to ourselves. Let's have some phone messages from listeners about who you think the greatest of all time is and why. Democracy, let's have a referendum about who the greatest player of all time. I love referendums. They come up with some crazy results. Let's do it.
So I think it's Roger Federer. And it's basically because he managed to raise the level of game like no other player did before. For instance, if you take someone from the 80s and 90s and suddenly made him play now, he wouldn't have a chance with most players. And that's because of how Roger Federer managed to raise the games on such a high level.
And that was Ricardo, my cousin from my mother's family. Big fan of Federer.
So I think that Roger Federer is definitely the greatest of all time because I think that he's extremely talented. He makes everything look so easy and he's got the most Grand Slam wins, so that kind of says it all.
Savvy, a really awesome tennis player and a friend of ours here in Brighton. And we have some pretty damn good tennis matches together.
I think it's too early to say who the greatest of all time is, because, well, it's got to be one of the current three, really. And I'd say at this point in time, it looks most likely Nadal will have the best record of the three, not just total slams, but if you include head-to-head, just because he's quite a bit ahead of Federer on that, and only just behind Djokovic as far as I remember. So you'd expect it to be a Nadal, although you also have to look at it. You have to include Sampras in the chat as well, because he got so many slams and he was so dominant, and he retired really early and on a winning note as well. I mean, he's the only player pretty much who's gone out after winning a Grand Slam. It's such a good way to finish. And no one could live with him at his best. 7 Wimbledons in 8 years is incredible. I also think quite a big thing that would count in Djokovic's favour is Djokovic's best slam is the Australian Open. He's won, I think, more than anyone else. Federer's is obviously Wimbledon, Nadal, French Open. And if you look at the number of times each of those players has lost to one of the others at their tournament, I don't think even Nadal or Federer have beaten Djokovic at the Australian Open, whereas Djokovic has beaten both Federer and Nadal at their favourite tournament. So purely from a head-to-head point of view, Djokovic has got them both. And also, I mean, he was the last one to develop, really. So he struggled to get those slams early on because he had to compete with those two at their best, whereas his best came a little bit later. So, I mean, I don't like the guy, but I think you could easily make an argument for him as well. And I'm quite surprised no one has, I guess, just because of his lack of popularity, really. It's an interesting one.
And that was Steven, a good old friend as well, captain of Hove Tennis Club, first team, where we play, unfortunately, we play doubles. And now?
So for me, even though I haven't watched like tennis when McEnroe, Bjork, etc. were playing, I think that Roger Federer is the best player of all times. First, because he's the one who has more Grand Slams. So second, he's 30 years old and he's still fighting Grand Slam finals. And for me personally, I like his attitude in court. A big majority of the time he's so focused and relaxed, and he doesn't do things that I don't like grunting. He seldom argues with umpires. He seldom moans about his own mistakes and frustrations. He keeps it to himself. And I mean, he's a genius and a very complete player. Yeah, that's my big reasons to be a master and the best of all times.
And that was Antonio, one of my best and oldest friends who lives in Macau. We have to thank all the people that decided to participate, accepted our invitation. Not a lot, but enough to have a few extra opinions. Okay, so for the rule change, here we go.
Here's the music.
Talking about rule change. Talking about rule.
Okay, so the rule change that I want to suggest for this episode is there a Grand Slam left where when they reach 6-all in the fifth set, the match goes on without a tiebreak? Nothing anymore.
Yeah, I mean, can you briefly explain how each tournament differs when it reaches that 6-all in the final set?
They used to differ. There used to be slams that it was a tiebreak at 6-all.
Yeah, the US Open for years and years.
There you go.
The early 80s, Jimmy Connors, John McEnroe, semi-final US Open, went to a tiebreak, final set, 7-6.
So there you go.
Wimbledon's always been different.
No, Wimbledon
no tiebreak until...
Wimbledon and the Australian.
Ah, okay. Wasn't
the Australian also
that, yeah.
lasted forever, wasn't it?
Yeah.
They would just have to win the match with two games separating them.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people out there, even McEnroe and others, who support the idea of putting a limit, like a tiebreak at 6-all, or like they do at Wimbledon, tiebreak at 12-all.
That's the new rule this year, which it actually came into force
just,
in the first year of it, yeah.
Yes. For me, I absolutely love the idea of a match going on forever until the bodies of the players cannot stand it anymore and see who is the true warrior at the end.
To be fair to listeners, David does practice what he preaches. If you ever play tennis against him, he's not going to cry off in the third, the fifth, or even the seventh set.
Yes.
He does like to play two clear games.
Forever.
So, yes, you've got a clear conscience there.
Exactly.
But would you accept your view is in the minority?
Yeah,
it's maybe in the minority. Maybe not amongst tennis fans, but amongst wider fans. I find the general rule is, with that kind of playing two clear games,
yeah.
is my friends who aren't tennis fans are in favour of having a short, quick shootout at the OK Corral
yes.
to settle it. Whereas genuine tennis fans who play tennis are more in favour of it going on forever because they love tennis.
Yes. And not only, for me, this goes beyond tennis. It's taking them to a place where we don't see human beings go much. You yeah. know those incredible marathons that go for hours?
Can I ask another question then?
Go for it.
Kevin Anderson versus John Isner, semi-final before this year's Wimbledon. So we're talking 2018. This is the thing which made Wimbledon change. And lots of people, I wasn't one of them,
You mean Mahut versus Isner?
No, that was even before. I think that's generally accepted as amazing because it lasted for so long.
It was incredible.
Though a lot of people were, this has got to change. But I thought it was lovely. Outside courts, not a centre court. But I think the one which really led to the rule change was the Anderson versus Isner semi-final, mm-hmm. which I was actually playing you that day at tennis and I started watching it. And I think it was the fifth set when I stopped watching it because I had to rush off to play you. That's what changed it. And that's people said that was so boring. But you can't just apply and say, well, if you know, I think a lot of people, Federer, Roderick, that went on 12-10, I think, in the fifth set.
Yeah.
And people love that.
22-24.
Oh.
Roddick versus Federer.
Gosh, well, yes, amazing. You're right. You're actually right. Yeah. So double the length of the final set
crazy.
Could be. And that was good. But when you're watching two players you don't like, that's not good. But you can't just say, I want this
match to have
a limit. Crazy.
For me, the rule change suggestion is this. Keep the slams different, first of all.
You like that.
I like that. Some ending on tie breaks and some ending on two-game separation. But, okay, keep it only for the final. So tie breaks until the final, fine, because we have to move on with the tournament.
Okay.
But the final has to be two games.
Infinite.
Not in all slams.
I like your thinking.
Yeah. I mean, if I can watch a tennis match that goes to 40-40, 44, 42, whatever, I want to see them. You remember that final between Djokovic and Nadal?
Yes.
At the Australian Open that went on forever. And at the end, they needed chairs and the ceremony while they were waiting for the speeches to go. I will never forget that. It was just unbelievable to see those two warriors take their bodies to the limit. And this is where you see human nature go to the limit. Like a man lost in the desert and having to go on and on.
Well, like boxing used to be 15 rounds rather than 12 rounds.
Wow, yes, there you go.
Yeah.
So don't copy everything. Don't make all the slams the same.
I like your thinking.
At least
and I like
the
thinking of tie breaks in the rounds apart from the final. Because the final, after
it's
the final,
special.
You have a chance to recover. I think it's understandable. If you win the final or lose the final and it goes 36-34, the next tournament you play, the organisers are going to forgive you if you withdraw because you're so exhausted. But if you're 36-34 in the semi-final, you're going to struggle in the final. Like Isner with Nicholas Mahut.
Yes.
He lost on centre court a different court. Next round in straight sets, he could barely stand up. You know, the umpire had to point him in the right direction at the start of the match. So like you're thinking, maybe with the Grand Slams, the ones with a roof can be infinite in the final.
But something like
the French Open, where you got the rain and the weather, maybe that should be a tie break.
Great.
In the
final.
And the US Open's always had a tradition. Let's keep it Wimbledon, infinite, and the Australian Open.
Infinite. And the other two wins.
Settled. That's settled.
Settled. I like that. What about your rule change?
My rule change isn't as good as yours. You've trumped once again. But I want to talk about knock-ups. Okay, it's not a film and it's not a Seth Rogen film about a couple and the lady becomes unexpectedly pregnant. I'm talking about the tradition. You come out, you knock up for 3 or 4 minutes against your opponent, and then you go into it. And I'm going to just raise discussion about it. Do we need a knock-up? John McEnroe, Commissioner of Tennis, has said he'd like it to be considered that people just go into a match. Boxers, when they come out for a boxing match, sorry to bring up the boxing metaphor again.
Great example.
They don't have 3 minutes of just lightly hitting each other before they go into it. And the nerves build up. My God, I haven't thrown a punch since I was in the changing room. Am I going to be able to? So
I love that.
Exciting. And
exciting.
You can practice in your locker, you know.
Have your
coach Murray, and Murray gets his coach to throw tennis balls at him to test his reflexes. Just come on court and just do the toss up and just serve, get into it. And you might have some players caught cold. I think it would level things too. I think some of the big players might need that knock up to get into it. But my main gripe about knock ups, David, is at my level when I'm playing, they just seem to be infinite, like the fifth set of old tennis matches, in that you can find yourself knocking up for 15, 20, 30 minutes. I once played against someone, we both played against him. Let's just call him Matt for argument's sake.
Yes,
the names might have been changed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd honestly knock up with him for 40 minutes because are you ready? And Matt would go, a few more. One final thing before I chuck it back at you is a new tradition I've noticed in knockups at my level, which you don't see at professional level, is the knockup where your opponent wants you to come up to the service line and practice playing pitter-patter table tennis
that
with them.
That is the most ridiculous
When does that happen?
Oh my God.
You never do that. You either volley.
I get pissed off when people ask me to do that.
Maybe those shots.
It's pathetic.
Twice a match, and you're doing that. And I've heard people go, oh, this, you know, it's good for your wrist. The pros don't do it. Completely pointless. And it's become a new thing. Maybe it's just Brighton related, which has swept it. What is the point?
It's depressive, man. I find that your suggestion about stopping the knock-ups is actually very appealing. Overall.
More so in non-professional tennis. I think the professionals do limit it to 3 minutes. Fair enough. But
even more at non-professional.
This is more at public court level.
No, I like in both levels, to be honest. The example that you gave about the boxing is excellent because I normally use the first set as my warm-up.
Yeah.
Of course, I don't play a Wimbledon final. So it's definitely a different story and it means different things at different levels, but I think it would be fun to see where players start from the first point.
Yeah.
From the first hit on the ball and see where they are and immediately adapt the best they can. So I agree with the...
You would accept my rule change.
I like your rule change. I don't think there's anything wrong with just putting players out there. They've played tennis all their lives, okay?
Yeah.
So stop the warm-up and get straight into the
match.
We're
doing well. All these rule changes are being accepted,
we're enjoying
aren't they?
Them, man.
We are ripping up the rule book.
We are. We need to bring somebody in that hates our rule
change. Or we need to disagree with each other's rule changes.
Yes.
We are in danger here.
We're going to get there. Yeah. Oh, sooner or later, we're going to have a rule change that we're not going to like, and then we can debate.
I'm going to come up with something really crazy next week, which you've got to reject.
Exactly.
So if any listeners have any rule change ideas, just let us know.
Shoot.
You can leave a comment on some of these websites.
Yes.
And have we exhausted?
That's it. Thank you very much for coming or for going. And we'll see you next time.
God bless. We're on holiday for a while. we'll speak to you soon.
Woohoo!